We're down at the Arioles Museum. We're going to be interviewing Leighton Aves, and this is Shirley Bradley and Lisa Fine.
I can't touch this at all. My dad was there when they organized the unions.
Oh, okay, great.
In order to join the union, you had to be a member of the KKK, Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, this I've never heard before.
Oh, this is true. And you had to be also, in fact, they went on strike, and the whole background was KKK and unions were together. And after they won their first, it was a strike in-house. They struck inside of the building.
Right.
It was a sit-down strike.
Sit-down, right.
And my mother used to bring food to the window. She used to bring food to the window for them.
Your father was in engineering, though, right? In the engineering department?
Yeah.
So he wasn't supervision or management or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the workers,
mm-hmm.
and he was instrumental in mm-hmm. participating
mm-hmm.
in the union. Okay.
So after they got the union organized, after the strike was settled, and they all went down on the bridge down there next to the Rio and pushed each other off the bridge into the river.
Why?
Just celebration.
For celebration
of
the Great River.
Yes.
Now let me ask you this. I don't know if you'll know the answer. At the time the union was getting formed, there were lots of battles by different groups of people. Well, not just physical ones, but what they called jurisdictional battles.
Yeah.
There was an employee association, which was a company union, right? The Rio employees.
What we call a sweetheart.
Right, right.
A sweetheart union?
Sweetheart, mm-hmm. yeah. Company union.
Okay.
There was also the AFL
mm-hmm.
union, and then there was the CIO one,
mm-hmm.
right? Did your dad have any... did he participate in any of those battles about
no.
which union or anything?
Well, I don't think he ever said anything, but we ended up in the CIO.
With the CIO, right.
Yeah.
Okay. But you don't remember anything about, you know, which
one
was better?
No, but I do know that at that time he brought home a time bomb. He did bring home a sword.
Your father did?
Yes.
Wow.
A sword marked with a KKK emblem.
He did?
Yes.
Did he feel strongly about those kinds of things?
KKK, no.
He didn't.
But on the union, he felt strongly about the union.
Okay.
But that was a thing that had to be, I think they were drawing the strength from each other. You know, KKK was strengthening the union, the organization.
Mm-hmm. Did they feel any fear from the KKK, knowing of their reputation?
Not in those days.
Not in those
because
days. What kind of time are we talking about? Early 30s, mid-30s,
yeah,
37, right.
Yeah.
And they hadn't been too active in Michigan and causing
disruptions
and death like they did in the South.
I think that was accepted, more so accepted there because they weren't as tolerant of blacks and so on and so forth. So therefore they figured strength would be in, and I think KKK was stronger than the CIO at that time, as far as local.
So are we saying, I'm a little confused, are we saying that a lot of people that worked at the Rio also belonged to the KKK and they couldn't join the union if they were KKK or
no, no,
they had to be this way.
They had to be in tight with them.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They were one of the stronger, they'd probably be a more stronger external supporter than physical violence if it was necessary.
Was this one of these well-known, well-kept secrets? So everybody knew it, but nobody really talked about it.
Yeah, we sure haven't heard that one.
No,
yes.
This is brand new to me. This is good information.
My dad brought home, and I talked to him before he passed away.
Uh-huh.
Told me all about it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, he had an egg-shaped time bomb.
Your
it was
father.
All cast iron, where you turn the timing on it. And he did have a sword. And I don't know, he might have had some other weapons, but my mother got mad at him because his kids kept playing with the sword.
It was dangerous,
so
yeah.
So she took the sword and the time bomb and put it in the front of our home.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the plaster. We didn't have the upstairs plaster. It was just, you could look right down in the...
Down between the walls?
Yes. And so she dropped it down there. Whenever they destroy that house, the house is still standing. They'll find those things that are still in there.
Oh, my goodness.
For goodness sake. And the house is in Lansing.
It's between here and Grand Rapids.
Oh, it's out on West Saginaw,
yeah.
That little white
house.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we remember
that. It's the only one that's still sitting there, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
So your father worked for Rio.
My grandfather.
And also. Your grandfather.
He was in the heat treat department.
Your grandfather was?
Yeah. And Dad, I don't know. Now, he used to repair cars before he went into engineering. But he engineered, he used to go down that first ramp inside the door on the right-hand side. That's where he used to repair the cars. That was when he had the cars, no trucks.
Right. Yeah. This was, so your grandfather worked there when, and then your father maybe came in the 20s or 30s?
I don't know. Grandfather, how long he was there, had a dad or a dad got him in. I don't know.
Oh.
Because it used to be, you needed a job to reapply. You get a relative.
You had somebody bring in.
Yes.
And right. They would go to the supervisor or
yeah,
somebody and
yeah,
say, I've got a good guy.
That's all I got. He protected my job because I was a scatterbrain kid. Really.
Scatterbrain kid?
Yes. I almost got fired one time. My dad went to that thing.
Huh.
The guy called me and that's okay. And I got mad at him. I went and punched him. Hmm. I almost got fired.
Did your grandfather come to Lansing to work here at the Rio?
That time he was living in Sunfield. Yeah.
Was
he lived in Sunfield Street.
Right, and Ted is what he calls Otto.
Yeah.
Ted told us you all grew up on a farm, basically.
Oh, yes, we did. I love it. I never trade the farm life. But, well, let's see.
Right.
I brought that up.
He did his homework.
Well, during the time when the Rio was in a problem period where there wasn't a lot of work. They were getting laid off.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was, of course, working the farm and supporting.
In the 30s during the Depression.
Yeah. So he went to work at one of the drop cords. So I think Melon Drop Cords.
Oh, yes.
So he worked part time at what Melon Drop Cords.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a real long ago. And of course, Laverne was working his way to college, so he came to Rio and worked in the export box.
And where did you work in the Rio?
Well, which I started at the Rio, and I was a chip handler. And I had a little hook, and when they get through the drill press, and that, there were shavings in there, mm-hmm. and oil, my job was to hook onto that pan of shavings, 35 cents an hour, by the way.
Okay.
All that over to what we call...
1941, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What we used to call a separator. And you'd have to pour the shavings in there, and then it'd separate the oil from the shavings, and they'd be used with oil.
Mm-hmm. These were metal shavings?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were on the floor, and you scraped them off?
No, they were in little pans. They put these pans underneath the drill presses, and then the oil would run down there so it wouldn't burn the metal.
Oh.
And then we salvaged that. And then I worked in the plating department.
What did you do? What did you do in the plating department?
My job was to, any metal that was brought in, I had to dip it in acid. Acid bath and then scrub off the rust and that so that it could be plated and so on. So that was my first job.
What were these
nasty chemicals?
Yeah,
these big pieces, big sheet metal, chunks of sheet metal? Or
really small pieces.
Small
but
pieces.
There were some that were, large ones. Yeah.
Oh, and what were they used for after you cleaned them?
Oh, parts of trucks.
The trucks.
Stuff, yeah.
Parts.
Yeah.
And things. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just reading some complaints about the plating, actually,
yeah.
Some of the military vehicles. They weren't holding up well enough.
Yeah. If you didn't get all that rust off of it, and then the bomb fuse department came in, and it was 42.
Mm-hmm. And they came in to where the plating had been in the same department, or?
Yeah, that was ended up part of that same thing, and then the plating department settled in one corner, and the acid baths and all that stuff were in one corner, and of course machinists all through the whole thing. We were doing 24-hour shifts.
You're talking about
7 days a week during wartime.
Oh yes, three shifts. That's right.
Yeah.
you talked about that acid bath. Is that something that would splash on you? Did you have to wear any protective clothing?
Rubber, just an apron and rubber gloves.
A regular apron or a rubber apron?
And boots. You used to have an apron, rubber gloves, and rubber boots to keep the acid off.
So that wasn't a problem then.
Not in those days, you didn't think about health and safety and all that.
Okay.
So, let's see, from there I left and helped move lawnmowers.
In the lawnmower division?
Yes.
Whereabouts in the factory was the lawnmower department? If we're speaking northeast, southwest?
Maybe the northwest. So you had the
Oh, we're talking along Washington?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is for folks who never saw the factory, that might be hearing this tape.
Yeah. We would load the lawnmowers and boxcars and we would load.
So that would...
I had a chance to buy a lawnmower too, but it's too late.
Not real lawnmower?
I jigged yet. I might add this in and you can put it where you want.
Okay.
We used to build inboard motors. Did they tell you boat motors?
Boat motors? No.
Yes.
No, this is new to me.
No, yes. Mm-hmm. They built boat motors. It was inboard.
Inboard?
Yeah. At the same time they were making the lawnmowers. They have the inboard. I am, they have one.
Do you?
Oh,
yes.
You do.
Original.
Great.
Golly. Does it still work?
Yes.
Hey, that's a great testimonial.
Yes.
I didn't know that. How long did they make?
Dad, I couldn't.
As long as they made lawnmowers, probably, three or four years.
Yeah. I left there and went into materials handling. But,
I wonder how those went, if they sold a lot of motors. I know they sold a lot of mowers.
Yeah, that would be underneath the trade name of Rio, and everybody would want to get them. But
right.
Then, to build an inboard motor, and then you got to put a shaft on it, and then you got to seal the thing. And I don't know how many, probably Art Fromm or somebody else would know how
many
were sold.
Mm-hmm.
But I worked during the time that I left there, and I went material handling. And I stayed there for many years.
Material handling.
Yeah.
Now, what did
stock
you,
chaser.
Stock chaser. That, oh, that's what material handling is.
Yeah,
it's
bringing up
supplies for the men on production.
And I negotiated a new title for them, and we call them materials expeditors.
Trails?
Expeditors.
I like that. material expediter.
Yes. And then they bought us the first three-wheel gas-powered, whatever they were called.
Those little stock trucks?
Yeah, yeah. Little
Go Devils or something?
Yes. And we used to get in those things, and if they need a part and repair for on the semi line.
Yeah, they really moved, didn't they?
Yeah. I worked both sides of the spectrum from management to union. I was a union organizer.
When?
Well, you've heard of the TOPS union, TOPS?
No.
No? Oh, tell us about that.
Gotta tell you about that. We had between UAW, where they organized office unions.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I was their representative from UAW to organize the union in the real, if not office.
Mm-hmm. This is already by the 60s, wasn't it? Yeah, okay.
So they fired me. Then the Department of National Labor Relations sent a little letter, you can't fire him, he's the official organizer of the union. And they were very cynical that it would never be passed.
Mm-hmm.
We won, and so the union organized it, what they call TOPS.
Mm-hmm. And that stands for?
Technical Office Personnel
Staff. Mm-hmm. And why were you in a position to organize these people? Were you working position at that time?
Yeah. Well, no, I was like a steward.
Oh, as you were in the union.
Oh, very active in the union.
Okay, 650.
Yeah, almost 650.
So TOPS grew out of extra protection from the workers.
For the workers.
For the office workers,
which
the,
they didn't workers. Have any protection.
They did not have a union.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the supervisor's whim, they could. So then, as a turnabout, I left their materials handling and I went into export boxing.
Okay.
Export boxing, where we boxed whole trucks and shipped them overseas.
Right, we've heard about this.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was.
They would take the truck, build it, and then tear it down in sections? And
yes, yeah. We had boxes that would put four axles in it. Or three axles, and depends on what kind of a truck you were shipping overseas to Pakistan or wherever. And then we would, in exposed metal, we would dip in oleum, I think rust-oleum, like rust-oleum, and then we'd seal it.
Now what is rust-oleum? I'm sorry, what is the oleum? Is it like a thick grease?
Yeah, rust-oleum, and then protects the clear metal until it gets overseas and the glue is solved.
And so when they receive it, then they have to scrub all that off?
Oh, yeah, it would wear right off.
It would wear right off.
Yeah. So the whole truck was test-driven, and we had a box that we put four motors in, or two motors, or whatever they bought, if they bought a whole fleet of trucks. Then we take them out, and then we replaced them up. I was a crane operator also.
Mm-hmm. Crane operator, that must have been fun.
Yeah. And then we just set them down on flatbeds.
So were these military trucks, or were they for private?
Did,
some were military.
The military trucks, the ones we sent, the parts were like the transmission. But they had to be the military specs where we'd take the transmission and seal that up and so on and so forth. But most of the stuff we did here were not military.
Okay.
Most of the military were driveways. I even did that.
They had to be
ready
to drive immediately when they came off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Were they coated in anything against the salt air in the ship? I mean, they had like a primer?
Just the spare parts.
Just the spare parts.
Like we did transmissions or did a motor.
Okay.
There were military motors and
built to their specifications for their needs.
Did Ted tell you about my dad? He's an engineer. I'm just going to throw this in.
Go ahead, sure.
They built a truck that had a frame, and it was full of styrofoam. And it was a floating truck, so that they could take and drive that truck out in the water. And now they do that, and the tires would propel the truck.
Mm-hmm.
So they were so proud of this job. The frames were about this thick, and my dad, of course, was an engineer. So whose job is it to test that? Well, my dad's. He took it out in the middle of the gravel pit.
Oh, it sank.
It sank.
Let the record show that the truck sank.
When we say sink, do we mean so it couldn't be seen anymore? I mean, with water over the top?
I don't know. He got out of it and got back to land, so I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
He never did tell.
Back to the drawing boards.
I got a picture of that truck, too.
Have you?
Yeah.
Good, I see that.
Now, when you bring up export boxing, which you were in later, in the 60s, but in the 40s, from some of the stuff that I've been reading, was a very rambunctious, very rebellious group. They were responsible for a lot of the actions that took place in the mid-40s, after the war. The guys in export boxing?
See, when I went in export boxing, I took over, I built boxes and I packed and all that stuff. Then I became a supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
Foreman to Joe Sawyer. Joe Sawyer was the superintendent of the department.
Mm-hmm.
I took over the night shift. Our problem only was the fact that people were going off for lunch and coming back in ground.
Oh, okay.
And we had, because it was not expected a long-term job, they were hiring off the street just for anything. In fact, they hired my brother.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to try to do his way through college.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not the most cooperative.
Okay.
I don't think there was anything from union-wise. Or
okay, because in the mid-40s,
yeah,
there was a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of those Wildcats from the 40s? Because you started in 41, and 45, 46, there was a lot of labor disputes.
Strikes.
In fact, I participated in
You did?
Two. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there were literally dozens of them, so I know it would be hard to remember.
Well, we did well. More than once, just over the something that somebody got fired or something like that.
By a little personnel.
That was before the UAW CIO started controlling when you went out. And the National Labor Relations Board wasn't so involved in those days. So whatever the local disputes were, the international rep at that time went like...
Don Fowler.
Wouldn't interfere. They'd support the people because...
Did you ever know Wayne Keeney? No.
No, I mean Claude Rainey.
Okay.
Claude Rainey. Mm-hmm. Very, very good friend. In fact, he's the one that sponsored me to get the Walter Luther Award.
What was that given for?
Outstanding service to the UAW-CIO.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And was that because of your labor organizing efforts?
Combination of things. So when I retired from the state, in the end, I received the award from them plus all the other awards from the state of Michigan.
So you have a wall at home.
Yes, I have a wall.
Now, some of those disputes also, from what I've been reading, which is, of course, different from what people lived, had to do with the peace rate system and changing mm-hmm. rates and mm-hmm. things like that.
Time studies. Yes. Oh, yes.
Made that
because
touch.
At that time, they time study men would go out on the floor and they would mislead the time study until we organized enough that we had our own time study men would stand over their shoulder.
Right.
And then from that time on, it kind of straightened out. But in the meantime, in fact, I was on the bargaining committee that got abolished the peace work. Mm. I was on the bargaining committee when we abolished, at one time in York, elected union officers that represent different zones. The body elected them from election. Mm-hmm. Then they would pick what zone they wanted. And I told them, no way are you going to send some millwright over to represent my division in my zone. So I changed changed the bylaws of the union. And it says, we will elect our own representatives. So that changed that.
You're speaking of zones within the factory?
Yes.
Different departments would be different zones,
mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So that instead of we have commitment from some other zone that isn't familiar with your type of problems.
Couldn't give a fair assessment of what,
true.
With his time study report,
mm-hmm.
how much you could turn out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that before you got your own time study men and you said the other ones, you thought they weren't doing the job fairly, they were upping the production too much, or was it just because they didn't understand your job?
Okay, we considered, and like I say, it was as a steward and so on and so forth. We figured that these people were salaried people. Therefore, they were prejudiced before they begin. They could speed up the line, assembly line, and that, and still the time study wouldn't be incorrect. So we were disputing it because of the fact we didn't have a representative there that could stand side by side. It was their option by the time they got through, and they had no proof, you know. They didn't bother to give us proof of why they speeded up the line or that. That's why a lot of that Wildcat stuff.
Right.
Yep.
Mm. Now, was there any this is something I just came across recently in my own work. Was there any tension between the younger guys who had just come back from the war and the older workers who had been there for a while? Did you? Because I've got a little bit of a sense of that from some of my research.
The only thing that the people, I was a Marine.
Yeah, so you were one of their troublemakers.
Yeah, well, I guess so too. But
that's a Marine for you.
the thing I think bothered some of the people, and I don't think it was very widespread, the fact that they had been working there all this mm-hmm. time, and here's some guy that's gone off to service and come back and accumulated the same amount of seniority as he had.
Okay.
But it wasn't really anything really bitter about it.
Okay. My sense was that for some of these guys coming back from the war, they didn't want to be treated badly after everything that they'd been through, and they weren't going to put up with some of the stuff from management that some of the old-timers had been putting up with. And that was, I just wanted to know if that was...
Well, management there, and I know people talk today that it was a family affair.
Right.
Management was management. There was no... And labor was labor. And there was no... common ground, very rarely that you ever saw, because they were out there to produce at any cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true.
Because
I was on the other side of things, like
mm-hmm.
I said.
Right, right. Well, let me bring up something else then. Your family was one of the best examples of this idea about a real family, mm-hmm. though, right?
That's exactly.
Because I came across the picture of your family that was on the cover.
Thanksgiving
dinner. Yeah.
How many generations of the Aves family worked there?
Well,
grandpa.
In that picture, there must be several.
It's the whole table.
Yeah.
It's a whole, I should have brought it.
This is at a Thanksgiving dinner held at the clubhouse? Or
no. At their home.
Okay.
At their home. And all of the people sitting around, you know, worked in the real.
All real people.
Yeah, and all the little kids and everything. It's a wonderful picture.
Is that in one of the real spirits?
The item.
Yeah,
and the real item.
The items.
Yep. We may have that in archives here if someone wants to look that up.
I've got one.
It really is a wonderful picture. When I looked at it, I went, oh.
You know what? My grandpa, they had to rechange his, look at his face, like here, right here. They changed his nose for something.
They touched it up?
They touched it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it just didn't look like that.
Wow. Isn't that odd?
So you didn't have any problem, you know, participating in the company to that extent, right?
No.
Okay.
It was... And I'm not going to name persons I'm managing. Our real one, Claire Lautensacher.
Mm-hmm, I know. Okay.
He
yes,
was
that
the
name's
most
come up a
hated
lot.
Man, and I was a bargaining committee member. I could not go into a room, and you have to use diplomacy and so on and so forth. I'd walk into a room, and I'd be shaking man, just looking at the man,
goodness.
Because it went back, and this is a little story that's off the cuff.
Okay.
Do you want us to shut it off?
No.
Oh, okay.
You let it.
Okay.
I worked at that time in the receiving room. And I was a it was a material handling, but I was a checker where we received the stock. And Claire Lautensacher was a line foreman over there. Him and I used to visit, you know, we were just chit-chatting. So I made him a suggestion here, and I told him, this is what I'd do if I were married, this is what I would do if I were married. But really, I'm not stupid. I'm not smart either. I'm not stupid. He took all those ideas that I had given him, took them to upper management. They were implemented. And he took credit.
Were there bonuses in those days for ideas like that?
Yeah,
like
they had
an incentive.
Company suggestion.
Right.
Company suggestion. But, and you got paid according to whatever that made for the company? Is that how
that
worked?
No. Did they?
From the stuff that I've read.
I think
that
came after this happened.
Yeah, by the 50s they had.
That's what I'm
like
asking
that.
Because there will be people that don't know this.
So I got paid from the state of Michigan. Oh, did they tell you about our fair? We have one fair.
In the plant?
Yeah. Did they tell you about that?
No,
let's hear about the fair.
No, okay. The fire. Fair or the fire?
Fair.
Oh, I'm
fair.
Sorry. Oh, yes, I've heard about the fair.
Have you?
That was the other thing I was going to ask you, because when I looked on the list of the contributors and the producers, it was all A's.
Wow.
All the names were A's.
Yeah.
Just for the record on this tape, since people may not hear the other tapes, tell us about the fair.
Well, it was organized by just all the people. Bay Shores and A's were some of the principal contributors. And we even took our mother's pet monkey over there and put it in the fair. It was just on the railroad track side of the clubhouse.
On the north side?
Yeah, in the back there. And I don't really remember a lot about it, but I know that what it did. The kids kept teasing the monkey. We had no protection for anything like that. And that monkey was really bad shape. And I'm sorry I ever took it.
So what was the fair basically? Was it everybody brought an animal or food?
As far as I remember, we had booths and food booths and all that stuff, just like a little fair.
Oh, okay.
And I don't even remember how the heck we ever decided to organize.
It was 1954 they had the first one.
And you and the Bayshore, your family and the Bayshore family, or were the organizers of this?
We were the contributors.
Oh, I see.
Participants.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the two of the major organizers of that fair were Fern Placeway and Artis Peck.
I believe that.
That's right.
Hard-working
ladies. 40 years, almost the same thing. It's amazing. But yeah, it was 1954. And it was like the state fair, you know, people, they judged pies, and they judged the cutest baby, and, you know, they had all these different kinds of
activities. Oh, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Did they only ever do just one fair? It didn't become an annual event.
One fair.
And it was successful, but a lot of work probably doing it.
Yeah. And it was, they used to have them before the war, in the 20s, they had them yearly.
Oh, so this was an updating,
right,
perhaps.
Right. Just having it again.
Mm-hmm. Arith was telling us last time we visited with her, since she was the head of the Rio Hospital,
yeah,
that the Rio was the first factory to organize blood drives. I imagine this is during the Second World War.
Yeah.
She mentioned Mead, Mrs. Mead.
I don't think
she was her predecessor.
Oh.
Nurse Mead.
Nurse Mead. And
M-E, I think it was M-E-A-D-E.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. She was her predecessor. Did you hear that?
No.
No.
Oh, well.
We're trying to get Artith right now, actually. She hasn't talked to us yet, so I'm sure we'll get that.
You fractured my ankle.
No. On the job?
Yeah. I used to be like a finger truck operator, mm-hmm, and I was on night shift or overtime, and we were storing hubs, and they come on pallets, wheel hubs, and then you had a board separator in between them. I come around the corner, I misjudged the post, and it drove the board right in there and pinned me in there, saw my truck.
Oh my.
And there's nobody in the plant.
Oh.
So I had to hammer and hammer that thing in reverse. And then turn the key on, jerk, 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 and finally got back up, fall down on the floor, and we had block floors.
A wooden block
yeah,
floors.
Yeah,
right, grease, the grease,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I can imagine the grease and the oleum and everything.
So I crawled off the truck head first.
Into the grease.
Crawled by hand, all the way to the ramp.
What kind of a...
Where the ramp goes up there at the hospital.
What kind of a distance would you say that would have been? 100 yards?
At least 100.
Football field, maybe.
Yeah. At least that. Crawled up there in my head. And I finally got a plant protection man out of the shanty. And I said, I think I broke my ankle. And so Arthur Pappen came down. She said, oh, you're kidding me. I said, no, I'm not kidding you. She laughed.
I wouldn't be crawling like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, they wouldn't even turn the sirens on the way to hospital.
Oh, so now that's what really bothers you, isn't it? Where did St. Lawrence or Sparrow or...
I think I went to Ingham-Med.
Ingham-Med was closer.
Yeah.
So anything serious went that they couldn't treat
with.
Yeah.
I was wrapped around this stuff.
Okay.
Then I worked in export boxing. I forgot the receiving room, right, and I went to export boxing. And I went from export boxing to timekeeper.
Oh, timekeeper.
Now, how does that vary from... Oh, that's keeping track of the hours that the personnel work.
And then I was assigned a certain area and their payroll.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't long, and then I became foreman of the timekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
Then I became paymaster. So I was head honcho for all payroll in there.
What were your duties?
Closed the door.
Okay. What were your duties being paymaster? Did you oversee the whole department?
Mm-hmm. And that's the first time we started out with computers, too. It was probably about, but I was a foreman. Yeah, I was a payroll foreman. And that's when we started doing computers. So we started doing things off of master lists and stuff like that. And then you'd have to sit there and check off.
Did you stay through to the end, 75?
Well, when they went bankrupt, then the chief accountant was no more payroll. So he said, well, I had top seniority in the shop. I was the dog of dogs on the top payroll.
In the payroll department?
No, in the whole shop.
In the entire factory?
Yes, I was number one for 34 and a half years.
Because they had let so many people go.
Oh, yeah. So, he came to me one day, he said, Layton, you can take a layoff or you can go out on the repair floor because they were trying to get as many trucks out the door to get the money out of them. And you've had all the experience in material handling, so I said, sure. I said, I'll stay with it. So in the last, now I'm saying I don't know about the front end, how many people were later than that, but I was with, I think there were six or eight of us who were still left in there. few repairmen. There was no maintenance really in the building at all.
Just to get these trucks together and get them out.
And no matter how we got them together, they would cobble and put on stuff that went wrong just so that the guy, they could get their money out of there.
So they couldn't.
Just a couple of little things that I thought about while we were talking. You mentioned the KKK stuff right at the beginning, from the 30s. Was there any evidence of that later on that you knew when you were there? No, you never saw anything like that.
Did that die out when the Rio went union? Did the KKK
sort that? I think that they pushed them aside because they didn't recognize them anymore, although they were still, even when I went in there, but not very many professed, public professors.
Right, more, it was more
under. Yeah. Yeah, but I know this for a fact.
Okay. There are places I can find out.
This is an interesting new avenue for us to explore.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me because the history of unionizing the auto workers in the 30s is always talked about in connection with the communists, right? Mm-hmm. The left wing, not the right wing.
Yeah.
So this is a very funny twist on the regular story that you hear. Yeah. It's always said they're radicals in the union and stuff, but is very different. The other thing I wanted to ask was about hunting. We talked to Ted about hunting too. And hunting among the workers in the shop and hunting in your family.
Yeah, yeah.
He said that he liked farming better than working in the factory, and he liked hunting better than farming.
Yeah.
That's true. Is that right?
Well, we were, and this has nothing to do with real, but the fact is that we didn't have combines, we didn't have electricity in our home, we didn't have telephone, we had a railway planter, and I would never trade 1 minute of farming, being a kid raised on the farm for 10 years in the city. Because we knew how to use a corn knife to cut the corn, we'd go out in the winter and husk corn, we'd do stuff I didn't like to do.
Like swapping out the pig pen or something?
I had a pig called Nothing Enough, and I had a turkey called Gobby, and everything.
Did they end up for dinner?
No, they all died natural causes.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, my goat, Mike, the goat. Yeah. But all of us, and then of course when November came, or hunting season came, everything else took second place for going shooting pheasants and rabbits and then deer. Then they expanded the deer hunting, and then we also went out west.
Hunting out west?
Yeah.
So I think what Lisa's interested in is, did you get time off from the Rio to go hunting?
Oh yes. That was one thing we planned on all year long. I will go on November the 15th. On the rabbit hunting, that's going to be just for a weekend. But that was a priority. If we didn't get our, well, we always got it. So.
For pheasant and deer both, you were allowed time to go on?
Not pheasant hunting. You don't have to.
No,
we were born
not.
And raised on a farm. And
you had pheasants all over the place.
And the same thing with rabbits. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have deer down there. It was unheard of to see a deer down in Lower Michigan. We had to go up to Atlanta to our hunting property.
Oh yeah, he told us about that. No women allowed.
No women allowed. We still go up there.
Really?
Muzzle loading.
Now have you changed have you changed the rules about who can attend?
Well, I don't think the girls would like to be there.
It's one of those men type places.
It is.
With deer things on the wall and cobwebs and dirt.
But
the factory, the Rio didn't object to the fellows taking a week off for deer season.
You had to go by your seniority. And the more, if you had seniority, you got preferential. The ones with most seniority got the time off early.
Oh, so this didn't extend it just anybody?
No. Well, no, everybody got, if you accumulated a week off or 2 weeks off, but the ones that gets the priority saying, I want this time off.
Oh, I
well,
see.
Wait a minute. You can't have it off here because you got less seniority than he has.
I see.
So seniority, the ones that have been there the longest get the
best week.
Yes. Yes.
Right? And this was something that the workers and the management shared, too, because management liked to go out as much as the workers did that week.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, I guess I didn't catch it at the beginning. You worked there from what year to what year?
41 to 75.
41 to 75. Okay, I wasn't sure when you started.
Yeah.
So you were there during the war years?
Yeah.
Oh, you said you were in the Marines, though.
Yeah.
How long were you working before you joined the service?
The war broke out in 42.
Yeah.
December 41.
December 41.
You were drafted or signed up right away?
Well, you,
I signed up.
He signed up. You don't get drafted into the Marines.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So you signed up, so you went in early 42 to the service?
Yeah.
How long
yeah.
were you gone?
Bad at 32.
That's fine. You don't have to say. The only reason I even brought it up is because I was thinking if you were working in the Rio during any of the war years, I was just going to ask you.
I was back by 44.
Okay. Okay. So then, okay, my mother and my dad, my stepmother all worked at the Rio during the war. And I'm kind of interested, because my mother worked there during the war, I'm interested in the women that worked during the war years.
Mm-hmm.
Production, I'm not talking about upper management
or office
work, but how they were treated, were they expected to do the same kind of job a man would do, how they got along, you know, that kind of thing.
My mother was there.
Your mother worked during the war?
Yeah.
What department did she work in?
She was in the bomb fuels, and then she went to lawnmowers.
Uh-huh, after the war into lawnmowers?
Yeah.
And she liked it there?
Yeah.
Of course, she was there before the war started.
No, I think the war was
she came in
on.
Because of the
yeah,
war,
yeah,
when
yeah,
all the women
yeah,
were hired in.
Was it dangerous?
What?
Doing that bomb fuse work, was it dangerous?
No, they weren't live. All they were...
Was the case
like a spring or something?
Yeah, there were housings with different sizes,
yeah.
like this.
So the housing is the outside shell?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they put the fuse on the top and filled it full of the bug juice, and it was a live shell.
And my dad said he remembered that the women were asked not to wear jewelry. And I remember my mother wearing this blue hat with the snood, they call them, S-N-O-O-D, snood, kind of hair net, a real thick one, to keep their hair back out of machinery.
That's true.
I can't recall my mother ever having any real problems. She didn't, but some of her friends did, I guess, in other departments with attitude. When they first started working, the men thought, you belong home in the kitchen.
I suppose if sexual harassment was prevalent, then really, because it happened. Not only that, but a lot of the women were, shall we say, promiscuous. And it was party time after they left the house.
Oh, I see.
So, a lot of that happened, but you got to figure that because there were, well, anyway.
Well, you're putting women into where men usually work.
So.
What about facilities for women? Because if it was predominantly male before the war, say, did they have bathroom facilities and were they?
They had to create them.
They had to create them. Okay.
So they had women's bathrooms and men's bathrooms.
Okay. I just have a couple of more things, and then we'll stop torturing you.
Well, I love it. Anytime I got a chance to talk, you know. After all, I have to wait all year long. I'm the president of the association, a whole subdivision up there. And I have to wait for a whole year before I can get up in front of a bunch of people.
Oh, you save it up and you're ready for them, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious about... since you were there for a long time, 41 to 75, how things changed. And I know that's kind of a vague question, but the attitudes towards the war, the different kinds of people who worked in the plant, you know, just general changes over
maybe
the
even
time.
Maybe working conditions,
right, working
safety.
Conditions, things like
well,
that.
Well, no, because the union worried about the safety conditions.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of it. Things changed from this, after what we heard the speeches today about the pride and the working check. What happened, and it was a slow transition, it was fast to make money.
Mm.
So, let's say you bought a fleet of trucks. And I'm talking about costs a lot of money, like Robinson. Was it Robinson about that guy that's a cowboy and bought a horse?
Dale Roberts. Dale Robertson.
If you pay good money for a fleet of trucks, you want each one of those trucks identified. Management that so towards the end, they'd already robbed some parts to do another truck, so then therefore they couldn't put the right parts, same parts on this, so they rob it or cobble. And that's where we started losing our reputation, was when they started substituting for these people that were paying $30,000, $40,000 at that time for a truck. They don't want substitute parts. They want identically the same thing. And so it became, we started losing our reputation.
This would have been in the early 70s, 73?
Well, I think it started before that.
Before, in the late 60s perhaps.
I worked off the repair for a long time. And when you purchase them, like, let's say radios. You purchase 10 radios for one fleet of trucks, and they're particularly assigned with material handling. You mishandled them, somebody stole them. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when you got ready to do your fleet of trucks, you only had 3 radios left or 4 radios left, and you didn't have them. So you had to substitute or cobble. And there was a lot of that towards the end.
There was.
So the quality was just not being maintained.
The quality was going down the hill, and we knew it, but there wasn't anything we could do, you know. So, and a lot of the people were laying down on the job instead of producing they should produce.
Was that because they saw the end coming, or it didn't seem to matter? This is before that.
The thing was, we changed over to white, and then we changed over to diamond T, and then we changed over to huckleberry thin.
So the loyalty thing, the feeling
Plus,
nobody cares about us. So.
My management kept coming back, and just before I went on management myself, management would come back, well, we aren't making any profit, therefore you're going to have to take a cut, or you're not going to get this at your next contract. People then become start to get discouraged on that. So a lot of things were contributing to it. Not only that, but the last guy just funneled everything right out. He was a paper parent.
Mm-hmm.
And he just funneled everything.
Well, what did you just say if he had stayed? What were you just saying about Mr. Cappert if he'd stayed around town?
So I think he would have been somebody would have killed him. I know two of them. One of them finally killed himself, hung himself in his workshop.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he was going to be just, out of a job?
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah. Well, he was already out of the job because he was taking that money right away from us or the company. And using it for
his other businesses.
Paper bear. What he was doing. He would invest the money in this business and then invest money in some other business. He's the one that got caught with those fish out west.
With what?
Fish. What were they called? Mud puppies.
Mud puppies.
Mm-hmm. He's the one that got caught, and he couldn't develop the land and all that stuff because of that. Endangered species of things.
Oh, he had some land out west and he was going to develop it, and then it turned out the mud puppies were there. They're an endangered, and so then he lost his investment. Oh, what a shame. Except that probably was real money that he had invested in there, wasn't
it?
This was his own money.
Yeah. What he'd do is he says, I don't care how you get that truck together, just get it together so we can get it out and get our money. And he'd get the money and take it and use it someplace.
What an operator.
Investment in the company.
Well, he probably had no idea when he came in and bought that company. I wonder if he did in the early days when he first bought it, if he had good, honest motives, or if he came in with this is another place I can use. You think so?
I think that's strictly the way he thought right when he took over. Now, Diamond T and White Motor Company, they had the possibilities.
Right, they were historically in the business.
Yeah.
They had honest motives. They really wanted to make a go of it. I would imagine, as you touched upon it before, the workers, they must have been, by turns, discouraged, encouraged, discouraged, you know, up and down until I can see where this is an avenue we haven't really talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
But how that hit the workers, how it made them feel, how it resulted in maybe poorer products.
Yeah, because you don't have any pride left. You,
that when you're being used.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. Really.
Plus, Rio had a very strong identification as a Lansing company, and having somebody from the outside controlling what goes on there must have been demoralizing too.
See, when the white, if I remember, when the white brought us out, stock doubled, and then they had to split the stock. Then how Diamond T got involved with it.
That looked like a good investment, maybe.
Yeah. It turned the lights on.
Yeah. Don't worry, I won't lock us in.
Ugh.
We made arrangements.
I'm going to have to use the bathroom.
I think they have one somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about it. It went back on. So I have a little bit on here that you don't have. So.
Okay, that's right. Is there
any? Years of that.
Oh, okay, let's stop it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Anything else? The only other thing I have is just some more, if you have any other recollections or ideas about how things have changed in terms of the effects that the union had, like the different types of unions, you know, from the 40s to the 70s. Yeah. The other thing that I'm very interested in is how Lansing changed. You know, your impressions of how Lansing changed during those years. I know you weren't a city boy, so you know you weren't living down there. But a lot of people who worked at Rio and were living in the city, living nearby, talked about how
Derby's,
the city changed.
You know where Derby's photo studio was used to be on.
No, where
Washington
was it?
Avenue.
Derby's
photo studio.
Was, I wonder if that was where on North Washington, just across Michigan.
No, it's further. Well, about 3 or 4 blocks. You remember Wimpy's?
Yes, I do.
I'm not from
See,
here.
She's not from, I'm a Lansing girl, so.
It was just down the street from Olympus.
Oh, okay.
That was my first city dwelling. I
lived
in
there.
An apartment up over the top of Gene.
Right on Washington.
Yeah. Never do it again.
I didn't like living in the city.
No, that was the last time I lived in the city.
What, about what time would that have been? Mid-30s?
No.
Way up in the
40s.
Yeah,
so we still had red brick streets downtown in those days.
Yeah,
buses and all the stores were open.
Yeah.
Everybody came.
Those are the kinds of things people talk about, how it was such a lively place.
Yeah.
There was a lot of going
on. All the
going
theaters.
On,
and Central High School.
Yeah.
You went to Central.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Part of the LCC campus now.
Yeah.
And all the theaters downtown, did you?
Oh yeah, the Strand Theater, Gladmer Theater,
Capitol?
Lansing Theater.
Yeah, the Lansing Theater.
Yeah.
The Capitol.
The Capitol Theater. Yeah. Orpheum.
Orpheum.
What was the one?
There was another one across the street.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we had about here, but I wasn't born.
We had about 7 of them downtown.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And it didn't cost that much.
My first taste of frosted, what do they call them, frosty, something old.
Ice cream?
Yeah, chocolate and the ice cream was the confectionery
store?
Shop. Yeah, on Washington Avenue, went in there and they had the first soft ice cream.
Oh really, soft serve ice cream, like in a machine?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the confectionery store, I remember
every day
that.
I'd come over there and
that was a real something brand new, wasn't it? Soft serve ice cream.
And we used to go to the movies, what, 15 cents? Yeah. And we used to go to free movies.
At the clubhouse.
Well, not only there at the clubhouse,
but where else?
Country. Out in the country.
Out in the country.
Free movies, yeah.
Yep. We had them in Holt when I was a little girl.
Oh, that's right. I went to, after I left here, I went to Holt. Two places when the Rio went bankrupt, and when they went bankrupt, I lost my home.
Mm.
I couldn't get a job.
You
I
were just
over,
suddenly out of work?
So I went several months without a job. It just happened to be that I was a special different shareholder in Eaton County. I heard about this job that went down there at the unemployment office. I said, got a job. I hadn't lost my home yet, but I was pretty close to the home. So they sent me over to military headquarters and told me that there's a chief of security job from the state of Michigan, not a good retirement office, right? Military headquarters.
Where was that? Military
on Washington Avenue.
Oh, on Washington Avenue in that time.
Armory. Everybody calls the Armory.
It was on Washington?
Yeah. We used to rent...
Downtown here.
Right here.
Right out here.
Yeah.
Oh.
South Washington.
South Washington.
The Armory.
Oh, yes. And I knew where the one was on Marshall Street.
This is the one on
South Washington.
That's the military headquarters.
Yes, it is. You're right. I was thinking you meant there had been one downtown.
So I set up a whole new security system there.
You did?
Good.
So you were, when the Rio went bankrupt, you were out on your ear, and so were a lot of other people, but you got yourself into another job, but a lot of people couldn't, could they?
Yeah, no, because once you get there with that 50 years of age, then they don't want to hire you because of insurance.
Even then?
Yeah.
Because that's what we talk about now.
Right. I had all those years of experience in material handling. I went with Oldsmobile that they were. Was a job over as a purchasing material. I and another guy from Rio went over there with years of experience.
And union membership too, which you think might help.
Yeah. So we sat down and I went through that personal interview and I told the girl, I said, the minute I walk out this door, I said, you're going to file that in 13. Three people applied for the job, two of us with experience. This guy had come from college, graduate, had different jobs, got fired from every one of the jobs. They hired him because he was a young guy.
Oh, because he was young and they wouldn't have to, would they have had to pay you more because you had the experience, or you would have drawn the same pay as this greenhorn?
We would have drawn the same pay, but our insurance would have been more. So, once you go,
and your insurance would have been more, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they save money.
That's interesting.
And once he gets a good job, like the guy may stay there, so you're working for the 500 job. Hmm.
And you said your wife worked there for a while?
My first wife.
Yeah.
At the Rio.
That's another story.
Perhaps we won't go into that.
I don't have to hear about that. But you, for all of these years, the bottom line is I just wanted to know you had a family to support. Had another wife and you had some
children. Yeah.
Really to support
a family.
Four children.
Yes.
So you did need a job.
Three out of four had polio.
Three out of four.
Is that
polio?
Right? Before the soft vaccine came in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That used to be such a terrorizing
one
thing for parents.
One is permanently crippled. Another one restored, he lost a lot of his back muscles by him taking up wrestling in school and stuff. He served in Vietnam. A mortar sergeant.
Really? And he came home safely?
Yep.
Oh, good.
And the other one was a daughter, and I told her it affected her mind. I said, your brain muffled or not. But nothing that good does it. That's just teething.
I know. You're just teething. So did any of your, perhaps not, I was just going to ask if any of your sons went on to do factory work because Dad had, but apparently not.
Stanley, the youngest one, won a triple. He has to run crutches, but you talk about somebody that's independent. I talked to him one day, we were at a park. He was just a little checker, yeah, going around on his crutches. Some lady come up to him, here, you poor thing, here's 50 cents.
Uh-huh.
He came over, Dad, he says, that lady gave me 50 cents. I said, Stanley, I'm going to talk to you. From now on, unless you earn something, you don't take charity. I said, you take that 50 cents back over that lady. He took her back over and he says, thank you very much, but he says, I can't accept charity. Since that day, you talk about somebody independent, he will not.
Asking
he can't
for
do it himself. You don't ask anybody for anything.
I suspect this might be an age tradition, and yes. This is why you were all such good employees. Mm. Because, you know, and now we've talked to so many people, and I sense the same strain running through the families, you know, a willingness to get in there and work hard, do a good job, not ask.
My family is all just like this, all just like that. I didn't say mine, you know, my whole family.
Mm-hmm.
That were huggers. When you haven't seen, I don't mean any difference. Even my son-in-law, first time I give him a hug.
Yeah.
But now he gets the hug. I got grandchildren that I walk into Myers. One of them happens to be going to CMU, is graduating this year from CMU. I got a granddaughter that's going to Ann Arbor right now. A grandson just graduated, is going to go to LCC for the first year. They will not, no matter where they at in public. They love their grandpa. They come up and give me a hug. It don't make no difference where. And the whole family's like that. They're really that close. Yeah. I'm also a son to the Union veterans of the Civil War.
That's very impressive.
It is, you're trying to restore. There's a hall in Sunfield that's from the Grand Old Republic.
Oh.
It's our hall.
Mm-hmm.
And we are restoring that hall.
And this is a historic building as well?
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Wonderful.
Great. This is really off the subject, but I just thought of something I wanted to ask before our time fleets. We touched a little at our table today at the Rio Luncheon about the pensions. That Capert took all the money out of the pension funds and out of the, not the security, that's not what I want to say, the watchman, what am I trying to say here? Anyway, took the money out of another fund.
Took it away from, what was it, Michigan National Bank or someplace he had the money.
Something like that.
Supposedly in there. They never put it.
We were wondering, and it was brought up that some people have finally, after years of litigation and the government finally took over the funds and did the litigation, some people did get a little stipend each month from their original pension. Some got nothing yet, and there are still some money that the government's holding because they can't find the people, the former employees.
The whole story goes that, like I say, got involved. That's another thing I've gotten involved with. We had negotiated that when you retired, you got $575 a month for 30 years and so on and so forth. It was President Ford that signed the bill just before or right after. Because Studebaker got lost out, Tara. PBGC, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. It's the insurance that we will at least get part of our retirement pension. But you had to be retired 5 years or more to get the full shot. Each year less than that, it became less and less and less. So, if you had 30 in, 30 and out, which I could have retired at 30, but I wasn't old enough. So I ended up with 34 and a half years. I now draw $169 and some odd cents. My take home is $150.16.
And you should have had
4.5 years.
And you should have had $575,
and then it was supposed to jump to $675. That was per agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But because the guy ripped off our pension, then it never would have sustained everybody that retired. And so it's a good thing that President Ford signed the PBGC.
So it was a thing that finally enabled some of you to get something.
And they have to be 62 years of age. 60 or 62, I think it's 62.
They had to be that when the place went bankrupt
when they become 62, if they had 10 years vested rights. I don't think anybody's going to get anything out of it unless they've got 10 years.
10 years in the company.
10 years with the company.
And it's called vested rights.
It's called vested rights.
Mm-hmm. Any company now, vested rights are now transferable from one company to another. But at that time, it was not.
Okay.
And if you work for the real 10 years, then you've got a vested right in the company.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So maybe it's only, and when I talked to a plant protection guy, he's got $103.
Plant protection, somebody, that's what I was trying to say earlier.
Somebody at our table got 160-something.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty standard. Yeah.
But you figure, you give them 34 and a half years of your life to a company. And to have it go forward, and so I can understand it's two different people. So they're broken up, and there was another company about the same time. But they got Studebaker lost out when this other company.
That pension money came from, was it partly from your salary and partly matched funds from the real company?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's where the money came from that went into the pension funds. Yeah. And in turn, that must have been invested so it could grow.
What had happened, we negotiated these fringe benefits. During the fringe benefits, like your raises, your Blue Cross, your Blue Shield, are fringe benefits. Not cash across the line, but fringe benefits. And so much per hour work would go towards your pension, your retirement. And that's where you, and you depend on people sort of being diversified investment, where it's speculative, that goes into a solid bank that will pay you a fixed, at least, interest on it. Yeah.
Sound pretty good, didn't it, at the time?
See, that's been fun. I know everything.
I guess the big mystery to me, and we've asked it a lot to a lot of people, is, with all of these terrible things that happened, especially at the end, for those people who are there at the end, getting together with all the old real people is still a lot
fantastic.
Of fun. Yeah.
But did they tell you that it started before Fern started this one, before the people had organized this one?
Yeah.
There's one in Florida.
Yes, we heard about the Florida.
Yes. In fact, I used to have one of the people we interviewed, and I don't recall who now. Pardon me?
John Bowles.
That's right.
Very likely. Gave us copies of the membership and addresses and all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
different pieces of correspondence.
Yeah, skip that.
Not a nice
name. No, I know it. In the old days, it didn't make any difference.
Right. So there's something beyond just, those last years and all of the bad things that happened that obviously pulls people together.
I think I like this fact of doing it this way. But I'd like to have it like some park where you could have an extended...
More time to talk.
Yes.
Talk over old times at the Rio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, but not long enough for someone to get snockered up, like get them down here. And that is discouraging because you're going to come slobbing over here.
If you had...
I married, my first wife was an alcoholic.
So you feel a little sensitive about that.
Yeah.
It never ceases to amaze me, though, every time I'm with anybody from the Rio or the times we've been to the lunches, I have never seen any other business where people still get together, where they still want to be together, where they're still... I still sense a pride coming through about, I worked hard and I helped build that and it was a good truck.
And what they did for Lansing.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Even going to the plaque committee meetings, some of the plaque committee meetings, and that they feel really strongly that this company contributed to Lansing and Lansing owes them, something in
that
return.
That is so long overdue. I don't know how many people will even say, REOs, who is that?
Yeah.
Where was that? Never heard of it. And of course, it's...
The woman at the Historical Commission didn't even know.
I know it.
She didn't even know what it was.
She called me and she said, I've got to do something about a historical marker, but they just handed it to me. I don't even know what this is about or where it was or who it was or anything. And I thought...
You're still amazing me because I collect real items.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. And I'll go to flea markets and yard sales, particularly in Michigan, because that's where you think you'd find them. I'll go and say, well, have you got any real items? real? What's real? I says, you've heard of Ariolta? Yeah.
Well, oh, he's not heard that much.
So I go through an explanation of it, and I say, oh, I didn't know that. Here they freight from Michigan.
Mm-hmm. They can be from Lansing.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. We'll turn you off.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ray. This has been a very interesting interview. Well,